Welcome back, WNST Towson Baltimore and WNST Baltimore Positive. We're at Fadley's. The sign says so. Don Moeller's here. The good doctor is here as well, and we've been talking about education. Don, I want to give a full background on the doc, because I don't know that we did that in the first segment, the lead up to the lawsuit, because I know that's where you're going in
sure.
The streets of Philadelphia. So we're going to go back to the 70s here, right?
Okay, so give us, walk us through. That's a really good point that Nestor makes. Dr. Hornbeck, walk us through your background. You started, I think, as a deputy secretary of education in Pennsylvania, which is, I guess, what brought you to the attention of the Maryland folks.
That's exactly right. I went out of law school. I became deputy counsel to the governor of Pennsylvania. I did work for a guy who then subsequently became the secretary of education, and he took me over, and I became the deputy. And several years later, I quit that job because I wasn't spending any time with my kids and wanted to take a year off. And my boss sent my resume to Maryland, and they called up and said, we'd like for you to come here. And I said, I can't. I've got to do this. And I said, if you will wait a year, then I'll come. And
so you didn't think your life's work was there? I mean, because you had developed so many relationships, right, through Temple. It was like me leaving Baltimore. I mean, it was home for you to some degree, right?
It was, and my first child was both kids ended up actually being born in Philadelphia. Becky too, my wife also, we were about trying to find places where we thought we might be able to make a difference. And that's what led us each time. And that's why I've moved from Philly to Harrisburg to Baltimore, back to Philly, back to Baltimore over this last 40 years.
That ministerial passion to make a difference.
Where does that come from?
I was just going to say, has that been the driving? When you look at yourself, you're a pretty introspective guy. When you look, has that been the driving force for everything you've done?
Well, I grew up in East Texas. My mom and dad, I couldn't have had better parents.
What town?
In a little place called Longview.
All right, near Tyler?
Near Tyler.
Okay.
30 miles from Tyler.
You're an Earl Campbell guy? Or
we always battled Tyler for the the accolades of most important city in East Texas, which is a fairly low standard.
Oh, I know that.
in many ways. But yeah, I was very much a part of a faith community there. There was never any doubt in my mind from the time I was little that I was going to go to seminary. And
wow.
And then, as I said earlier, I discovered that my real ministry was in trying to create different opportunities for kids than they had in the past. And coming here, that became clear. And in 1978, I think it was, Mark Joseph, who was at the time the president of the Baltimore City School Board, whom I had known in Philadelphia in an interesting set of circumstances, he came to me and he said, Baltimore City and Caroline County and Somerset County, I think it was Dorchester or Kent, want to sue the state. And I wanted to give you a heads up before that happened. And I said to him, sue away, because in my judgment, the lawsuit is correct.
The lawsuit that became known as Somerset versus Hornbeck.
Somerset versus Hornbeck, that's right. And
you get residuals on that, have your name on it? Or, yeah.
Well, in a work-to-do sense, yes. Not in
it
the sense you
back.
Asked.
Yes.
It keeps coming back.
Well, break down the core issues, David, of that suit. Because to me, the issues in that suit are the same issues that are motivating you today. Talk about that lawsuit.
Well, the base of that lawsuit, and then a lawsuit that came 15 years after that, the Bradford lawsuit, and the basis for what's going on in Maryland today around the Kerwin Commission are all the same. It's about not equal opportunity. It's about equitable opportunity and adequate opportunity.
Give me the difference. Equal and equitable. Those are words. I'm a wordsmith. Go ahead.
If you have, let's say you spend $15,000 on kid A, who comes from a middle-class home and plays in the local sports teams like the Catonsville
Recreation program.
Okay, let's just use Catonsville as an example. Okay,
as an example.
Because it is City X in America. It's, right. it's a perfect American town, right?
Well, that child gets to play ball in that way. He takes piano lessons on Tuesday.
Okay.
He gets taken on vacations in the summer to visit Gettysburg, et cetera, et cetera.
Goes to the Science Center.
Has full access to the internet at home in HD where he can watch literally anything from good things to bad things, right? The world of education is open to this child.
Then you take another kid who is a low-income kid. He's eligible for free or reduced price meals, et cetera. He didn't have any of that. And so if you spend $15,000 on the kid that has access to a whole bunch of other stuff, as well as having books in his home, et cetera.
Read to from birth.
A good prenatal care for his mom. Appropriate quality child care when he's 1 year, 1 year old. Nutritious food on the table. He doesn't live in a food desert, et cetera. You spend $15,000 on him, and you spend $15,000 on the child who doesn't have all of that stuff.
And expect the same outcome?
Now, that is equal, though.
That is equal.
It is not equitable.
And you know, it's
I have never heard this in this argument in my life. 50 years in, I have never in 90 seconds... I'm going to take that home to my wife.
Wonderful example.
That's a breakdown there. Now you got me thinking. I almost want to drop the mic and go think about things.
Tell me, Dr. Hornbeck, if in an individual classroom, we talk about equity and equality as well. And I once heard someone describe it this way in terms of an individual child. And see if you concur or if you say, no, it's not exactly right. Was that, Nestor, if you have children in a classroom and you and I have glasses. We all three have glasses on it. But you look at children.
Oh, wow.
And I don't need glasses in that classroom. I can look at the board and it's crystal clear. And I don't have any trouble seeing what the teacher puts up there. Susie sitting next to me can't see the board without her glasses. She needs to put her glasses on. Well, if I were to say to Susie, I'm sorry, that's just everybody's got to be equal in here. You've got to give me your glasses because it's not fair for you to have glasses because Nestor doesn't have glasses.
And the only way I would change slightly is that the Susie who needs her glasses, in fact, in many, 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 many schools, simply doesn't have glasses to take them off. And that's true of dental checks. It's true of hearing.
Basic things that the Catonsville child may or may not have and take for granted, just living where they live, having the family they have, and having a dentist at the end of the street.
And to give you a great example of how to deal with that, it's not like we don't know how to deal with it. There's a concept called community schools.
And part of the Kerwin Commission
and
is right.
All schools in Maryland that have 55% or more free and reduced price meal kids has the right to be a community school, and the whole point of a community school is to understand that Susie needs her glasses, and you don't just need to send a note home to Susie's parent who doesn't have the money to buy the glasses. It's that you put in motion mechanisms for delivering the glasses to Susie in that process, and it pays off. It's not a cost; it's an investment, because every community school dollar generates seven other dollars.
Write that down,
of
Don.
Engagement.
It's not a cost; it's an investment. I want to make. I'm stealing this. I'm not even going to give you credit for that. I mean, I might, but
I would rather you convey that it's your idea.
I'll sell it as mine.
Because you're not an educator.
That's right.
And one of the things that I have to struggle with is people say to me, "Well, you're going to say that for goodness sakes, because you're an educator." But if somebody gets it as you are getting it and says it, then it just has a whole lot more meaning than in the course of it.
Well, let's reset back to the lawsuit. Let's go back to the lawsuit. I want to make sure I keep you guys in line here.
That was the point of the lawsuit, is that it was not equitable. Opportunity resources were greater in wealthier parts of the state. And one of the interesting things of that lawsuit was that I was the defendant by virtue of being state superintendent, but I became the chief witness for the plaintiffs.
Right. Jumped off at me.
I don't usually ask Don questions like this, but in like running Baltimore County, is it always equitable that the fire department in Hereford gets the same as the fire across every mechanism? Not thought about in that way, right? I mean, anywhere. But I guess in education, we all think we have to spend the same amount of... They're not the same alleys in Towson as there are in Dundalk, right?
No, you do it basically.
Based on what the need is.
Let's take roads. Road resurfacing is a good way to think about
it.
Interesting point.
You have more highway over here or more roads over here.
Our highway guys go out. They go all throughout the county. They prioritize roads. Which roads are in the most need of repair? It may be that...
Not where poor people live or rich people live or any of that.
Part of the county may, in a given year, get more road resurfacing money because they need it. If you were doing it on a totally equal basis, you would say, well, we're going to spend X amount in every community,
whether they need it or not. Right.
But
that's a really interesting citizen argument,
example.
Right? Literally.
Right. And it is difficult. And you didn't win the... what was the outcome of the lawsuit?
Very interesting.
Right.
I often say that I spent 12 hours on the witness stand after my own lawyer had me declared a hostile witness.
See, Nestor loves that.
This is like a scene in Ann Justice for All. You're all out of order. All of you.
I say that I spent 12 hours trying to plead guilty. And what happened was that at the trial level, the plaintiffs won. The system was declared unconstitutional, but then it was appealed to the Court of Appeal, and at the Court of Appeal level, the trial level was overturned, and so we were back in the same place we had been before. And the next time that it was really seriously considered was 15 years later, in 1994 with the Bradford case. And one of the things that worries me about now, we have this once-in-a-generation opportunity to change all of that, and if we miss it in the 2020 legislative session, and if history repeats itself, it will be 15 years from now, 2034, before we will say, we probably ought to do something major and important to alter the nature of education practice and funding.
And that's your passion about Kerwin. As I said, we're going to wrap up in the final session on Kerwin. Before we do that, there also during your tenure, you really took on, it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, two pretty significant forces, traditional education. You tried to take a hard look at the way special education services were being delivered and gifted and talented programs. I was really struck when you said somewhere in an article your children were in gifted and talented programs, and your reaction was, why aren't all kids having access to these programs? It's more field trips, it's more individual work, right. It's higher level. Why aren't all kids getting this?
We labeled some programs gifted and talented when in fact the stuff that was going on in those programs, as you point out, higher standards, more field trips, etc., are just the stuff of good education. And one of the big reasons that kids who aren't in them don't do as well is that there is no expectation that they will do well. Whereas if we create the circumstances with some of these more equitable opportunities, those kids are, I mean, special ed is a great example. When we had a big discussion when we put Project Basic, those tests that we were talking about earlier, into place, and the big discussion was around, do they apply to kids in special education? And the idea was, some people said, no, you can't do that. These kids can't do the same thing that non-special ed kids can do. Final decision was that, yes, they're going to apply. And what we discovered was that the proportion of special ed kids who met the higher standard skyrocketed, coming very close to what other kids did. And why is that? It was because we changed the expectations among not just teachers and principals and administrators, but we even changed the expectations of kids themselves and the parents. People for the first time began to have a conversation about, oh, these people who are professionals and supposed to know what they're doing think that my kid can do this. And by golly, my kid did do it in lots and lots and lots of instances.
But you had battle after battle. These are not easy fights. I mean, you and I joked when we talked a week or so ago, when you were state superintendent, a good friend of mine, one of the most controversial educators in the Maryland history, Stuart Berger, was superintendent in Frederick, and you and he were kindred spirits.
By the way, you've never told me why he was so rude.
Well, that's another whole show.
Oh, man.
That's
another one, man.
You want to have some fun with
it. Talk about a guy that had his career change. You went from serving the Lord to serving students. He went from serving students to serving the government.
You want to shake things up with
and it wasn't by choice.
We'll have Stuart on one day.
That'd be fun.
I will tell you,
Don Moeller was happy in Catonsville, then Stuart happened.
But they were fighting the same battles. David, here, and Stuart listens to Baltimore Positive, so he'll be smiling at this. One of the differences...
His name's on my diploma,
No one ever said that David, even when he was battling with folks, and you said now, today, you're still friends with Ed Rendell. When he was battling folks, they always came out on the other side and said, but David, he's a really nice guy, easy to get along with. Stuart's one of my really good friends. That's not going to be on his epitaph. That he was easy to get along with.
All right, let's get a break here real quick, because we do have to, we're on a time. Man, we're here a little later. Boy, Faithley's is rocking.
Faithley's is cooking.
I mean, there's crab cakes, oysters,
you name it. It's happening at Faithley's.
All right, it's Baltimore Positive. We're going to be back at Jennings and State Fair coming up. Ben Card's coming up. Ben Jealous is coming up. Ron Shapiro's back.
Reverend Al Hathaway.
Reverend Al's going to be joining us.
Sarah Heminger from Thread, who we hear about every
look
week.
At that.
He knows. Everybody. Everybody knows Sarah Heminger from Thread. Good things at Baltimore Positive.
As usual, I'm the dumbest guy at the table. We're down at Faithley's. We're at Lexington Market. We are Baltimore Positive, WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.